We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Caregiver Dave segment. I'm excited to welcome to the program first my co-host, Caregiver Dave. Dave, thanks for calling again. We just continue to have unbelievable celebrity interviews, don't we?
Yes, we do. So we're talking to Dell Wilkes, wrestler. Dell, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing good, man. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Good. Hey, let's start right off. Did you always want to be a pro wrestler? I mean, were you really obsessed with pro wrestling back in the olden black and white days on television?
Oh, absolutely. I was born and raised and still live in Columbia, South Carolina. And
as a kid,
I would watch wrestling, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, every Saturday. And went to my first live match when I was 10 years old here in Columbia. And just fell in love with it. And truly, as a kid, there were two things that just absolutely probably every waking thought of mine was football and pro wrestling. And I was very fortunate. I got to play football at my university, the University of South Carolina, and I also got to live out the dream of becoming a pro wrestler. So pretty lucky dude to be able to do both of those things that I dreamed of doing as a kid.
My father was born in Florence, South Carolina. So who were some of the big names back in those days?
As far as the wrestlers?
Yeah, when you were a kid.
All the guys that I grew up watching were Wahoo, and of course Flair was around then. Mm-hmm. But here in Mid-Atlantic, we got Wahoo and Johnny Weaver, Abe Jacobs. We got Jack and Jerry Briscoe came through the Carolinas. On Saturday nights, I could get Florida Championship Wrestling, and I'd see Dory Funk and Terry Funk and Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen. As a matter of fact, the very first match I went to live, I can tell you the main event. I can't tell you anything else about the card because I was 10 years old. That was 46 years ago. But the main event was Jack and Jerry Briscoe against Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen.
Wow.
And, man, those guys were larger than life to me. It was just mesmerizing just watching those guys in the ring, guys I had watched on TV. And finally, I had a chance to see them in person, and, man, they were John Wayne to me.
Yeah. You know, in those days, everyone used to criticize that wrestling was fake. Was it less fake or more fake back in those days?
I don't know that it was less or more. It's always been entertainment. That's what it's always been about. Now, back in those days, certainly. Yeah, and in those days, the business was more protected as they tried to pass it off as a legitimate contest.
Uh-huh.
You know, about 25 years ago, pro wrestling and Vince McMahon leading the way said, look, folks, we're strictly entertainment. We're entertainment just like a movie, just like a ballet, just like a play, just like a concert. We're entertainment. But back in those days, the business, in the business, did try to protect the business and present it, you know, more legitimate as an actual fight between two guys that really hated each other.
Now, Dell, that's interesting. So interesting you talk about that process. When you were a kid at 10, did you know, or you had questions if it was again fixed or not fixed? And I hate hearing the word fake. And I think they will find out from a former pro wrestler, not as big as Dell was. Height wise, I was bigger than Dell, but honestly, you know, growing up, understanding this business, it is the most painful business. You can't use the word fake. I would say fixed, entertainment, acting. We're like stuntmen, right, Dell, that go through the worst stunts in the world, and we never get someone to take our spot for the stunts, right?
Absolutely. And I want to slap the taste out of somebody's mouth when they say fake. And I always let people know when they use that term around me that they couldn't be further from the truth. You're exactly right. It's entertainment. That's exactly what it is. But as a result of a fake business, as some people would like to call it, I've had 15 surgeries. Now, I don't consider that a fake business. It's entertainment. It's very physical entertainment. But there's nothing fake about the surgical scars that I carry on my body. But back to your question about at 10 years old, oh, no, that was as real to me as Santa Claus. I mean, I would have never even thought crossed my mind. I thought Wahoo hated Johnny Valentine, and I thought the Briscoe brothers wanted to kill Rip Hawkins, Sweet Aunts, and it was real to me. It was as real as the air that I breathe and the flesh on my bones.
I bet you're very similar to stuntmen, you know, because stuntmen are basically, you know, trying to make something look more dangerous than it is, but they've got some scars, and sometimes it goes wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, when you're a professional wrestler and that is your sole source of income, that is how you provide for your family and, mm-hmm. and pay your bills, you're a combination of many things. At times, you're almost like a truck driver because of all the miles you put behind the steering wheel getting from one town to the next. You're also a weightlifter or a bodybuilder because of all the time you spend in the gym getting your body to look good. And then you're an entertainer at night when you're at work. And after work, you live like a rock star. So you're a combination of a lot of things when you're a pro wrestler.
Absolutely.
Neil, I got to ask him this question. Forgive me.
Sure.
But please tell me your opinion of Andy Kaufman and that whole spiel he did, you know, with the pro wrestling deal. I'd love to get your take on
that. I feel different about it today than I did then, back then. Of a guy just breaking into the business. I didn't view it the same way I view it now. Now I view it as actual genius. I think he did a great job. I think he did a great job in irritating the fan base and making them mad and making them want to see Jerry Lawler beat him up and hurt him. So I say there was a lot of comedic genius put into that.
Yeah.
Now, Del,
it definitely brought attention to the sport.
That's what I would do. It was a great story. And everyone needs to watch the documentary, Lawler and Kaufman. And also, the Carrie movie was really good as well. One of those great ones to talk about wrestling. Now, Del, you again played college football. So what position did you play in college?
I was an offensive guard.
Okay. Interesting.
I played at the University of South Carolina. From 1980 to 1984, and had some really special years there. My freshman year, 1980, I got the block for a Heisman Trophy winning running back, George Rogers, probably the greatest football player to ever play at the University of South Carolina, won the Heisman Trophy my freshman year, his senior year. And then I finished up my career at South Carolina in 1984, as a captain of that team, the most valuable player on that team. And at that point, we were the first team in school history to win 10 games. At one point that year, we were ranked second in the nation, had a shot to play for a national championship and screwed that up the 10th game of the year. But also was very fortunate in that I was the first team consensus All-American that year. So had some very special years at the University of South Carolina playing football there.
Well, Del, let me ask you, what were some of the events leading up to you deciding, okay, I want to do this, and did the Patriot gimmick come in right at the beginning, or did that come later? You know, walk us through that.
Well, what led me to want to get into this business is I had a buddy of mine that attended the Citadel, a military school in Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. and a big guy, big muscled-up guy, and he had the gift of gab and big wrestling fan like myself. And so we had decided about my sophomore year in college that whenever football ended for me, whether it was after college or maybe after a few years in the NFL, the next thing I was going to do was pursue a career in pro wrestling, and he was going to, break into the business with me. And we did break in 1986. I signed with the Buccaneers in 1985, traded to the Falcons in 1986, and then the Falcons released me prior to the start of the 86 season. So that's when I put football in my rearview mirror, came back to South Carolina, and went through a school here in Columbia, my hometown, that trained professional wrestlers. The school was owned and operated by the fabulous Moolah, one of the most famous lady wrestlers of all time. And then just worked my way up from there. But the Patriot character didn't come about until 1991 when I went to work with the Global Wrestling Federation. Prior to that, I did a character called the Trooper, a sort of a highway patrol looking character, you know, with the Smokey the Bear hat and the belt and the handcuffs and the flashlight and the badge and all that stuff. But I went to work for Global in 1991, and we thought it would be a good idea because our military had gone into Kuwait to liberate Kuwait when Iraq had invaded Kuwait, and we thought we could take advantage of just that fever pitch of national pride that always goes on early on in a situation like that. And the nation was behind our military and behind the first President Bush when we went into Kuwait and liberated Kuwait. And so we thought, man, what a great opportunity to come out with a patriotic.
Who came up with it? Who was the person that came up with the gimmick for you in Global? And did you ever think that it would get so over that the WWF would pick this up? Because a lot of times when you get signed with WWF, it doesn't happen like that, that they got so over that you were really the poster child for America for a long time with this gimmick.
Well, I would like to take credit for the idea, but it wasn't my idea. I was working for the AWA, for Vern Gagne, and working as a character called the Trooper, and the AWA went out of business. Now, we were on ESPN 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 5 o'clock. After the AWA folded, this upstart company came along called the Global Wrestling Federation. They contacted me about coming to work for them. Their very first TV taping was going to be in Dallas, Texas, at the old Sportatorium. As a matter of fact, the Sportatorium was sort of our headquarters. It was where we taped all of our TV shows. So they sent me a ticket, and I flew out with my Trooper gear. Nobody said anything different to me. Get your gear. We want you there for the first TV taping. So I thought I was going to be working as a Trooper. And about 4 hours before we started taping that night, before the doors opened and the people came into the building, Bill Eadie and Joe Pedicino and Bonnie Blackstone, they were the sort of the brain trust of the Global Wrestling Federation, approached me with the idea of this character. As a matter of fact, they had the tights, the trunks, and a mask in a brown paper bag, like an old grocery bag. And I'll never forget it, sitting in Bill Eadie's motel room. Bonnie opened up that brown paper bag, and she pulled out these red, white, and blue tights and a red, white, and blue mask and red, white, and blue trunks. And they laid this idea out to me. And I thought, what the heck? I'll give it a shot. And that night, when I walked down the aisle and walked through the curtain, that building erupted. Those people had never seen that character before. But it was immediate. Just an immediate, unbelievable reaction.
Patriotism was high back then.
Yes, it really was, and it just sent my career, you know, on just a straight up arch. I mean, it just really, really, my career really took off there, and I was able to go all over the world with the character, work for the WWF, and it was a little unusual. Usually when you go to work for Vince wants himself or his creative team to create a character for you. Very seldom do you bring your own character into the WWF and keep it. But I was able to do that with the Patriot character. And it was always, no matter if I was in Japan or overseas in Europe or in the States, it was just always well received.
Hey, Dale, did you actually know personally the Hulk or the Rock or Andre the Giant?
Yeah, knew all those guys.
Did you fight them?
I worked... I spent several years working in Japan for All Japan Pro Wrestling, and Andre did several tours with us. As a matter of fact, I've worked tag matches with Andre. I've worked tag matches against Andre. When I was in WCW in the mid-90s, Hogan was there as well. So I know Hogan. And when I was in the WWF at the end of my career, me and Rock and D'Lo Brown traveled together. We drove together. We went everywhere together. We worked out together. We ate together. The three of us were always together. Now, this was before the Rock days. He was still Rocky Maivia, you know, just getting into that Rock character. But, spent a lot of time with him on the road.
So tell us about life after wrestling.
Well, it's been interesting. There's been some ups and downs, and my career ended because of a pretty severe injury. And so
how old were you?
In the way I, huh?
How old were you?
Well, I was I was, let me see, 60, 101, I was 39 years old when I had my last match, I guess. Yeah, 38 or 39 years old. And,
that's pretty young for wrestling, huh?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it was. I didn't intend to have to stop then, but when your body basically sort of fails you and gives out on you, and you're unable to, you know, that body is what makes you your money, and when you can't count on it to deliver anymore, it's over.
That should should solve the fake wrestling criticism, because your body really takes a beating.
Yes, absolutely, a big time beating, and.
So what are you doing today?
I have been in automobile sales for 13 years now. I'm at a Nissan dealership in my hometown, and it's been a tremendously good business for me. It's really been great. I mean, I've you know, sort of a hometown guy done well here in Columbia, South Carolina.
Do you promote the Patriot character with television commercials? You know, like I see some of these guys doing that. That'd be awesome.
We have done that in the past, and it's always very helpful. You know, a lot of times when somebody walks into a showroom of a car dealership, their defense is up, their shield's up. You know, they're just a little cautious and a little leery, but I've got pictures of my wrestling career in my office, pictures of my football career, and it's always a good icebreaker. It allows you to get your mind off business and talk about other things and just build some rapport with a customer. So it served me very well. Plus, you know, I've got good name recognition here in the state of South Carolina.
The entrepreneurship end of things, Del, were you ready for that transition, you know, from on the road all the time and a lot of things? You had to take care of your body, but a lot of things were taken care of for you when you were on the road. Then to now making more decisions, was that a challenge?
It was. And I'll tell you, it's funny, all those years I spent on the road, you know, I had a wife and a family, and I was gone all the time, and I'd come home for a few days and leave again, and sometimes for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, I'd be gone and I wouldn't see my family. But when it ended the way it ended, rather abruptly because of the injury, all of a sudden, I was home all the time. And, you know, I wasn't used to the way things had been done at the house. And so it created some problems between my wife and I, because we had never known life that way, being together all the time. And we eventually ended up divorcing as a result of that. Everything we had known was me being gone and her running the house. And all of a sudden, I don't have anywhere to go anymore. And it just didn't work very well.
Sorry to hear that.
Changes are difficult.
Oh,
they
okay.
are. It's hard for couples to get used to changes when things happen, isn't it?
It's easy to get along when you don't live together, practically.
Yeah, and when you're apart all the time and you're together for a few days at a time and you leave, but all of a sudden you're together 24 hours a day, because I went through a number of surgeries, you know, after my career ended, so it was probably about almost 2 years before I did anything, you know, as far as another career or getting into another line of work. And,
you still deal with a lot of pain today?
I do. I certainly do. I still live with the effects of what I've done to my body. And
any regrets?
But I'll tell you this.
Any regrets?
No, that's what I was getting ready to say. I wouldn't change it. I would do some things different, obviously, but I wouldn't go into another line of work. Listen, I lived a dream. I got to do what I wanted to do as a kid, what I dreamed of doing. As a teenager, I got to do it. I got to do it all over the world, and I got to do it with great people and people I had watched on TV, people that were my heroes and my idols as a teenager and a young boy, and got to make those friendships. So, no, I'd go through those 15 surgeries again to be able to do
Worth
what I got
pain,
to do.
Worth the pain, huh?
Yeah, so, Del, give me your greatest moment in college football and your greatest moment in pro wrestling.
Greatest moment in college football, without a doubt, was my senior year in 1984. Clemson is our big rival at the University of South Carolina. And we had not beaten Clemson during my entire time at South Carolina. And in 1984, we went to Clemson the last game of the year to play them in Death Valley, as they call their home. And we were down 21-3 right before the half. We scored a touchdown right before the half to make it 21-10. And we scored a touchdown with about 30 seconds left in the game to win 22-21 over our hated arch rival, the Clemson Tigers, the greatest moment of my college football career. And I would say probably the greatest moment of my wrestling career. There were a couple big, important moments that when things happened, it made me realize I had a chance of having a good career. But I'd say probably my biggest moment was beating Bret Hart on Raw Monday night back in 1998, I think it was, and sort of shocked the wrestling world, and which it led to a big angle with Bret and I, the big American-Canadian feud. So that was probably the highlight of my career.
Exactly. And then that's very, very interesting. So you have that's your dealership, but what else? You're also doing autograph signings, personal appearances still and stuff, right? Is that correct, Del?
That is correct. Still do those. Matter of fact, next month we'll be in New York, upstate New York for a comic convention up there. And so still do a lot of personal appearances. Get around the wrestling fans are great fans, man. I tell you, they're the greatest fans, I think, on the face of the earth. So it's always good to be able to be around them and just share your experiences with them. And listen, they know more about my career than I do. And that's how wrestling fans are. They, you know, they know about their favorite wrestlers and important moments in their career. And, of course, it's always good to be around the guys again. You know, we're all a lot older now, and we look a lot different than we did in our heyday, but it's still good to be able to get back together.
Yeah, but you look the same in your Patriot outfit, don't you?
I tell you, it's funny. I was telling somebody the other day, for about 14 years, I made a living without a shirt every night. You couldn't pay me good money to take my shirt off in public now.
Oh,
things have really changed.
Now, Del, well, let's talk about, like, the particulars. Any other goals entrepreneur-wise that you want to attain in your career, life after sports? What goals do you have as an entrepreneur?
Well, I tell you, my goals now are retirement. Just hopefully a few years down the road. I have got two granddaughters. One of them's 2.5. The other's 1.5 years. And I want to spend time with them. It's amazing when you become a grandparent, how things just change for you. And, now that is what I enjoy doing with my free time. I've never hunted. I've never fished. I've never golfed. I've never done things like that. I was always with my family and my kids. And now every free minute I've got, I want to be with my granddaughters. So I'm looking forward to retirement down the road, not too far down the road, so I can spend more time with them and just be with my family and travel and take those kids places and do things with them.
Fabulous. Now, Dave is a caregiver, and Dave has a caregiving question for you. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, sure. Del, you're old enough to have your parents, like, start entering that age where maybe they need some care. Have you ever thought about what's coming their way or what's happening with you if one day you may have to be their caregiver?
You know, I'm fortunate that both of my parents are still alive. They're divorced and have been for a while. My dad is 79, my mom's 77, and they're in excellent health, very good
that's
health,
great.
Still very active. So, but I have thought about eventually one day, there may come a time when I have to do that. And as a matter of fact, speaking of a caregiver, I have a sister that has special needs. She lives with my mother. She's 41 now, my sister is. So one day, if nature takes its progressive course, when my mom passes, then it will be up to me to take care of my sister. She has to have, you know, she can't live by herself and live on her own. So she'll always need someone with her. And I always tell people,
caregiving is coming. You know, there's no escaping it. You're either going to need one, you're going to be one. And now's the time to learn how to be a caregiver and how to take care of yourself so you don't burn out. Not after tragedy strikes and your loved one's disabled and now, you know, you don't have time to scratch your head, let alone learn how to be a caregiver. That's why I wrote my book. It's My Life, Too, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity. So my contact information is caregiverdave.com. There's a commercial.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Del, I connected you with you on Twitter, but you're on Twitter. What other social media can people connect, fans of yours that want to know more what's going on with you, Del?
Well, it's on Twitter. Twitter at Del Wilkes, all capital letters at Del Wilkes, and then Facebook, Del Wilkes, and then I've got a wrestling page, Del the Patriot Wilkes, on Facebook as well. I've got a website, DelThePatriotWilkes.com, and Del is D-E-L, not D-A-L-E. It's not Dale, it's Del. DelThePatriotWilkes.com is our website where we sell our merchandise, our masks, our pictures, our posters, DVD. We did a documentary a couple of years ago, and we've got a three-disc DVD that we sell off the website as well. So all of our merchandise is at the website, DelThePatriotWilkes.com. And then Del Wilkes on Facebook and at Del Wilkes on Twitter.
Awesome. You're fabulous, Del. Thank you, Del. Thank you, Dave. And guys, take care.
Thank
and Del, I'll be in touch because I definitely want to continue this relationship and off of the air. So let's just stay connected, okay?
Yeah. Let me know if you ever become a caregiver. We'll help you out.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.